The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at ADMworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's November the 19th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. It's the 144th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. More on that later. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. And then Dave Dickey will be along with the latest details on how the farm bill is shaping up, or as the case might be, not shaping up for passage prior to the end of the year. And don't forget that at the bottom of the hour, each and every Monday, we check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Monday afternoon. Futures in the nearby December wheat for the soft red, a 756 and a quarter settlement price, up 6 3/4. The March futures at $7.78, finished 7.5 cents higher. And May contract at 765, a dime higher. July futures 679, up 13 3/4. September for next year at 682 in the wheat pit, 12 cents higher for the day. December corn futures down 2 cents at 377.5. The March at 394.5, down 2, and the May futures were down a penny and a half at 404 3/4. July corn at 413, down 1 3/4, and September's at 417, down a penny and 3/4 as well. December futures for next year at 3 1/4 lower, finished at 421. May futures 427 for 2009, 3 1/4 lower, and the May 2000. Those were the March of 2009 at 427, down 3 1/4. The May of 2009 at $4.30 1/2, down 2.5 cents for the day. December oats 275.5, down 4.5. The March at 289, down 4.5. And the soy complex for the day, nearby January's at 1070.5, down 7 1/4. The March at 6.5 lower, finished at 1087 1/4. May futures at 1092 3/4, down 5.5 cents. And July futures at 1096, down 6 1/4. November beans, $10.16.5, finished a half cent lower for the afternoon. December bean meal off $4.60 today at $287.70. December bean oil at $44.80, down 2 for the afternoon. At the Mercantile Exchange for the rest of the CME group, live cattle December contract at $95.17.5, $0.12 lower for the day. February futures were down a nickel at 97.40 for the February live cattle. Feeder cattle, November contract $108.66, down 19 cents. January futures down 30 at 108.82.5. And December lean hog settled $52 even, down 52.5 cents. The February contract at $60.20, down 20 cents on the afternoon. Outside markets for the day. January crude oil at $94.65 a barrel, 81 cents higher. February up 43 at $93.15. The dollar now stands at 75.763. That's down 0.029. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,002 is down just about 175 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Monday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, joins us today to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the commodity markets. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about what you've seen in the way of commodity markets throughout the past week and today.
Well, probably the most interesting development would probably be the bean complex today. The market did score a key price reversal to the downside. If you count the overnight trade, we did make a new contract high overnight, managed to close below Friday's low, sort of reversing the trend. It wasn't a whole lot of large volume, but the key is whether or not it follows through to the downside. Overbought as the market situation is, it suggests that we could be vulnerable here. Probably the most interesting aspect of that type of technical action, if you go back to August 16th when we made the low from the fallout from the news of the subprime, then it could be a problem, and we had beans down limit. From that low to that late September high was about it was about a six-week rally. Then we broke into early October. And October 9th, we made a low, and we've rallied 6 weeks since then. So it sort of mirrored the time frame that we had from August into October, 6 weeks up. When we were 6 weeks up, now maybe we're due for a correction. Then also to sort of add a little bit more to that, a lot of this timing stuff was talking about a high here around Thanksgiving, and gosh, we're right there right now too. So judging by the technical action in the bean complex, one can say that maybe we're in search of a little top here and due for some type of correction here over the week, next week or two.
So when we look at those numbers, I think what we see is an 820 low on the August and a 940 low on October. And then we dropped up to a high today on the 19th of, what, $10.90. Is that all correct? I think that's all right.
When I if you look at the January, the leak futures contract,
correct
there. It's a little bit more active there, and I'm just looking off the January contract itself, not going from lead daily,
because
you get distortions from one contract going to the next. So it could be interesting to see what happens. You know, maybe we'll get some news on some demand, get some news on some weather. The other interesting point to note in the beans is the dollar, the strength of the dollar. And the reason I say beans is when you look at relationship to export to overall supply, beans, we export more beans percentage-wise versus corn. When the dollar was at its highs there, 2001, 2002, we were exporting a billion bushels of beans. And that's pretty hefty for having a real strong dollar. Now that the dollar is at all-time lows, we're only exporting this crop year projecting 975 million bushels. So even the dollar is historically low and the purchasing power of these foreign countries is relatively high, our bean exports are below where we were in the early 2000-2001 when the dollar is at all-time highs.
And what does that tell you about the marketplace?
It tells me that whenever somebody wants to buy something, they're probably going to buy it. Now, give due credit here. We are looking at higher freight rates and, you know, cost of transportation. There's some other culprits in there that is that's causing the cost of our grain to be a little higher when you just can't compare strength or weakness to the dollar in general, too. But a lot has to do with freight costs.
So in the bean market, we post an outside down day in the January contract. How important do you really think that is to this marketplace?
Well, if you're a technician, you go for your technical seasons. You know, you got to follow what the market, the chart tells you to do. You can't second guess it. Richard Dennis, one of the most famous commodity traders known to mankind, turned several thousand dollars into $350 million, and he did it through a technical trading program. When it said to do something, he did it. He didn't second guess it. He said it is much better to trade your signal and be wrong than not trade and miss the signal, because one trade's the one that can make you a lot of money. And so if you're a pure technician, this technical reversal, if you follow that, you got to respect that, because that could be the sign that we've reached a high.
It's probably important to note that that shows up in the January, but not in the lead option. Is that right? Am I seeing that right? Or maybe I've just got, no, I've been gone for a week, so maybe I just don't have my numbers. 11-16, yeah. I think that's what I'm seeing actually here.
The January is the lead contract. The November's
yeah, but the November expired
off,
on Friday.
They're done. You know, what we could be in a position now, if this market would sell off hard, we could be in a position posting a weekly price reversal to the downside. So there's you know, technically, there's several things to watch. The Novembers went off the board at 10.66 on a close. that low there on the Novembers was cleared down around 1040, 1039. Hopefully things won't get that bad, but we could have post a weekly price reversal if January's would go down and close below 1066 Friday.
So tell me about the corn market for the day.
Well, corn's caught here in a sideways consolidation pattern. Corn's finding good support on breaks in through here. We continue to see guys needing to book feed usage come in and buy it. We'll export business on price breaks. Also, too, there's ideas. You know, we need to keep corn higher here to buy acres. So corn's probably taking a back seat, and it's going to be more of a sideways trending market here until we get a little on here this winter and see how the month of December treats us. There's a lot of corn out there to be moved. The fear is in the corn complex, a lot of this corn can start to come to market, be shook loose as we go into December, as we see producers make year-end sales or first-of-year sales.
And wheat futures, the only place to manage to post a gain for the day. Was that just a correction from the downward movement we've had?
We've seen a heck of a sell-off, over $2 off the highs. Fundamentally, we're seeing a little bit of a concern weather-wise here domestically. The dry areas are not receiving the rain. If you talk to guys in the far western states, they don't have the wheat coming up. It's been laying in dry dirt for some time. Internationally, worldwide, portions of Argentina are dry. They did experience some cold weather here lately. Then, too, we're seeing some pickup in world export demand. Pakistan's in the market. Some of these traditional countries that are buyers of wheat are starting to come forward this price break to take advantage of these lower prices.
Anything else we should discuss before I let you go for the day?
Well, it's going to be a shortened week. It's going to be one of these weeks where you don't know where to get or just plain stay out. But traditionally, this week's been fairly good to the grain side of the equation, so it might be nice to reward the market. But the bottom line is we wish everybody an enjoyable Thanksgiving.
Indeed. So we'll be off on Thanksgiving on Thursday. There is no trade, though there is trade on Friday for about half a day. Is that right?
Until 12 o'clock noon. Some of this electronic stuff will go a little bit longer, but for the most part, Wednesday and on Friday, most markets will be done by noon.
And closed on Thursday. And Dave and I are going to take the opportunity to spend Thursday and Friday all day with our families for the Thanksgiving vacation. We hope you do that as well. I know probably you'll have to run into the office for a bit, but we're not going to do markets on that Friday. It's a pretty light day, so we thought it'd be good to spend some time with our families.
Very good. Have a good one.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. Here's what the forecast from our own Ed Kieser looks like for the two-state region. He says tonight in the north, cloudy skies, a few scattered showers. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy and breezy and mild. Lows will range from near 40 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 54 in some central and southern locations. Tomorrow, says Ed, in the north, cloudy, some periods of rain. In central and southern sections, mostly cloudy, windy and mild. Highs will range tomorrow from around 50 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 73 in the far south. Rain will fall frequently Tuesday night through Wednesday evening. The rain will change to snow before ending in the northern part of Illinois on Wednesday evening and in northern Indiana and central Illinois late Wednesday night. Thanksgiving Day will be cold with flurries. Let's take some time now to remember an important event in history. It was 144 years ago today that President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. The Civil War had entered its third day, and for 3 days, more than 90,000 soldiers from the Army of the Potomac and about 75,000 troops from the Army of Northern Virginia had fought at a crossroads in Pennsylvania's fruit-growing hill country. The clash between the Union and the Confederate soldiers in the market town of Gettysburg stands as the largest land battle ever fought in the Western Hemisphere. And on this day in history, President Lincoln came to the site to consecrate a cemetery in their honor. The brief Gettysburg Address marked a defining moment in the Civil War. Here's my reading of Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we're engaged in the great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives, that that nation might live. It's altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. That was my reading of the Gettysburg Address. President Abraham Lincoln delivered this most famous speech 144 years ago today. Well, up next, we'll stay with a battle of sorts. As you know, lawmakers are now on a two-week Thanksgiving break, and with the appropriations bills looming, there are many questions on whether a farm bill will reach the president's desk by the end of this calendar year. AM 580's Ag Director Dave Dickey reports.
When Congress returns from its Thanksgiving break on December 3rd, there will be just 3 weeks to finish a very busy appropriations agenda, making it more likely that the farm bill won't reach conference committee until next year. Even then, there are some differences between the passed House version and the measure currently bottled up in the Senate that makes a conference agreement less than automatic. While the Senate is likely to eventually pass a $250,000 hard cap on farm subsidy payments to couples, the House is opposed. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson.
Frankly, I can't understand why, if we're going to limit farmers, why we wouldn't limit every single entity that gets money from the government. Why should farmers be singled out and treated differently than corporations and other people? And if they continue to persist with this, I'm going to start offering amendments on every bill that gives money to anybody to put the same kind of caps on. Things like the Packer ban, things like payment limits, these may look good back home to people that are proposing them, but anybody understands how this works, these are poison pills that divide the industry and are causing the trouble over in the Senate, in my opinion.
Peterson says about 75% of the differences between the Senate and House versions of the farm bill could be dealt with fairly quickly. Peterson says the biggest issue remains funding. The House version has a $7.5 billion tax measure, while the Senate has a $15 billion tax funding package. Peterson hinted on Friday that he has, in his words, a strategy to deal with Bush administration complaints on how the farm bill is funded, and he says he's willing to go to the White House to deal.
What I would like to see the outcome of this be is to focus on what the problem is, and the problem is, in my opinion, non-farmers getting payments. The commodity title payments are designed to support and put a safety net under production agriculture. They're not designed to pick between big farmers and small farmers or to have the government telling people how they should farm. I know how to make deals. I know how to compromise. That's why we're sent here. And I am determined to get this done. So if we can get a bill out of the Senate, we'll get this bill done.
Friday, Democratic leadership attempted to end a two-week filibuster on the farm bill, but failed to get the necessary 60 votes to limit debate to 30 hours. The filibuster has revived discussion on whether to extend the 2002 farm bill. Kansas Representative Jerry Moran introduced a bill that would extend the current farm bill through next September.
We're not close to having a new farm bill completed, and farmers now currently need some certainty as to what the farm policy is and will be. And if we're successful, as Mr. Goodlatte indicated, we both want to see that a new farm bill is drafted. My impression is that it will occur now at a point in time in which it would be very difficult for USDA to implement that farm bill. And many farmers would go to their local USDA offices only to learn that the computer system is not capable, that the program is not in place, and that the employees have not been trained. So even if we are successful in passing a farm bill in the next several months, it seems to me that its provision would be delayed long enough to give USDA employees an opportunity to fully understand and implement that new legislation.
Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad says an extension might be necessary, in his words, in a worst-case scenario. But we have a chance for a breakthrough when we return in December. This is Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. It is a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. A quick review of what the weather looks like on this Monday afternoon from our own Ed Keezer. He says tonight in the north, cloudy, a few scattered showers. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, breezy and mild. Lows will range from near 40 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 54 in some southern and central sections. Tomorrow in the north, cloudy with some periods of rain in central and southern sections, mostly cloudy. And we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather in just about 2 minutes. And in just a moment, we'll talk with Greg Johnson of the Andersons right here in Urbana-Champaign about what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace, please.
Well, we had basis levels weaken a little bit over the last 10 days in the soybean market. I think most of that's due to just the increased futures price. Farmers have hit those nice round magic numbers for some of the numbers they were looking for. We've been over $11 a couple of times on some of the deferred contracts. March, May, and July have hit over $11, which I think that's only happened three times in the last 20 years. I think it happened four times in the last 30 years, and the last three times it's happened, that seems to be where we've stalled out. So there's some technical type traders saying that maybe we've gone high enough, but of course that one time that we didn't, that $11 didn't stop us, they kept right on going up to 14. So who knows whether we've stopped or not. Fundamentally, China's been buying beans. There's some concerns about dry weather in Argentina, so there's some positive factors out there. But on the flip side, the funds are long a record amount of soybeans and soybean meal. As long as they keep buying, prices could go higher. But if they would stop buying, farmers are obviously selling into this rally, and as evidenced by the weaker basis. And so prices could go lower if the funds decide to stop buying. Corn basis has been very, very steady, same as exactly as it was 2 weeks ago, but bean basis a little bit weaker.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn finishes at 375, January 380, new crop 396, cash beans 1042, January 1055, next fall 981, and new wheat is 639.
We appreciate you being with us, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. He joined us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of regional news.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A former Urbana man is being held in Iowa on murder charges in connection with the drowning last May of a woman in Boneyard Creek. Prosecutors say 41-year-old Curtis Collins was the boyfriend of the victim, 30-year-old Heather Muntian. Urbana Police Lieutenant Brian Serafin says it was Collins who first alerted police to Muntian's body. He says Collins and Muntian had both filed domestic battery charges against each other in the past. A Champaign Central High School student has been arrested on weapons charges after he allegedly displayed a gun outside the school on Friday. Police say 17-year-old Kevin Cooper faces charges of unlawful use of a firearm on school grounds and disorderly conduct. Champaign school officials reported on Friday that no gun was found in Cooper, but police say they believe there was probable charge, or rather probable cause, to charge him. A McLean County judge says reporters can't have access to a videotaped deposition in the case against a former Bloomington police officer accused of attacking four women. Media lawyer Don Craven had argued that reporters covering Jeff Pilo's case should have access to the deposition, which was approved by a judge and took place in a courtroom. But Judge Bob Freitag says evidence in the case should be withheld from the public until Pilo's trial. Pilo is accused of sexually assaulting four women between 2002 and 2005 and stalking another woman for a year. He's pleaded not guilty. Governor Rod Blagojevich wants lawmakers to head back to Springfield next week to consider funding options to help the Chicago area's mass transit agencies. Blagojevich today said he's calling a special session in hopes of getting a deal done before a short-term bailout runs out in January. Blagojevich and lawmakers have been unable to break a logjam over transit funding, a massive statewide construction program, and a proposed casino expansion to pay for it all. Indiana State Representative Larry Buell says he won't seek re-election to his House seat next year. Buell, a 73-year-old Indianapolis Republican, says he decided over the summer he wouldn't run for a 14th term, but waited until after the municipal elections this month to announce his decision. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is WILL Urbana. I'm joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Josh Garr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well. So there have been a lot of slowdowns in the air traffic around the nation because weather hasn't been particularly good as we head into the national holiday of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, it's you know, I guess opening the airspace in the East Coast will help things a little bit, but weather always can be blamed here, whether it's the result or not. But the pattern here is there is going to be a system moving through the Great Lakes region, which will then move off to the East Coast late Wednesday. Well, actually, it starts here Tuesday night into Wednesday, and we'll move into the East Coast by Thursday. And that's a pretty robust cold front, which will bring some of the chilliest temperatures we've seen, you know, this season here into the Midwest, and we'll move east towards the East Coast by the weekend. And that's going to be predominantly a rain event here with some snow on the back end in the Midwest and mainly a rain event as you move further east. So unfortunately, for those traveling on Wednesday and Thursday, whether it's by car or by plane, weather will probably be a likely name in the flight delays that will ensue as a result.
Yeah, cold and wet. That sounds like November. You mentioned some snow flurries. Any possibility that weather could turn a little uglier in there and maybe some sleet along the way?
Hey, yeah, there certainly could be some pockets for up further north where you see some sleet. And for those headed you know, north and west of Illinois, there could be some snow on the back end of this frontal system. But overall, and result of some of the warmer temperatures, you know, usually this time of year, you could get a pretty big, robust storm system, and there are some indications that maybe we see a storm system next week that could bring some more snow to the places like eastern Iowa and southern Minnesota and the Dakotas, but for now, it looks like this will be primarily a rain event with just snow in the air on the backside.
I know you folks keep track of the natural gas supplies and usage, and what are your predictions so far for the winter season?
We sure do. It's you know, the prediction keeps coming in because of the warmth, particularly in the population crescent from here in Chicago to the East Coast as well in the southern U.S. Heating demand thus far in the season is well below normal, and we're starting to get into somewhat of a volatile pattern here where you will see peaking of demand over a couple-day period, but predominantly you get cold for a couple days, and then you go back to seasonal to unseasonably warm for a period of 7 to 10 days. And from a heating demand perspective overall, we think that will continue through the winter, and as a result, probably lower heating demand than normal, either by a 10-year or 30-year normal.
And yeah, natural gas supplies are plentiful in place?
Oh, they certainly are. The natural gas supplies are near all-time highs here as we go into the heart of the heating season. So, you know, from a market perspective, prices are still pretty decent given that we have such a large supply going into the heating season.
Josh, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Josh Dars with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Somebody from that office joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Monday afternoon. Make sure you visit our website. The address is willag.org. You can listen to Josh's conversation with me again if you'd like, or you can pick up anything else that we record through the day, and most of it is. The Closing Mark Report is there and pieced out for you along with the pre-opening and the opening market report. Sue Martin's report during the 12:55 time frame is also posted on our website. It's all at willag.org. While you're there, make sure you sign up for our newsletter. Dave Dickey produces that one on Friday afternoon. It didn't get delivered last weekend, nor will it be delivered this coming weekend, so don't look for it then, but we'll return shortly in the month of December. Thanks much, and you have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.